Welcome. Welcome, everybody. Glad you all can make it. Appreciate our sit this morning. I'm going to start sharing the screen. And this is the last, we're on, there's been 10 Oxfording pictures that we've, and verses that we've gone through over the course of the year. And we're on to number 10 that we've been talking about over the course of November. And a couple of other teachers have shared perspectives about this. But I'm going to go over, kind of briefly, the whole series just to frame it. And hopefully that'll be helpful. So the Oxfording picture, the series of verses and pictures, the Zen practice, just describing what our spiritual journey is about. And we can relate to this. And it started out back in the beginning of the year about searching for the ox and finding footprints and seeing the ox. This ox, yeah, people talked about, well, what is that? Is it self? Is it our practice? Is it our mindfulness practice? What is it? Not quite sure. It doesn't have to really be known. But what is important here is that there is a searching, a finding, a looking for, a struggling with all these different parts of our journey. There's some way that life isn't quite all, you know, the way we'd want it to be. So we look at what could support our life, and we embark on a spiritual journey, or the hero's journey, as David Campbell talked about. Joseph Campbell. I knew it wasn't Jacob. So the searching is taming. And then there's, after struggling with the practice, there's a settling, there's a clarity that emerges, and ultimately, you know, is, you know, manifest in this circle here of forgetting self and the ox, this non-self emptiness. But it went on from there. So, person on a spiritual journey can embark kind of self-contained, go into a cave and become fully enlightened. But there's steps after that. There's the steps and then of returning to the origin and then now entering the marketplace with extended hands. So the Buddha kind of had this. Yeah, he came up, it all makes sense. I got it. And he hesitated. He wasn't even going to teach. He thought, okay, you know, good luck everybody else. But he was encouraged to teach. And so he embarked on quite a few years, most of his life, basically entering the marketplace and sharing his experience. So looking down, I'm going to bring down the verse here to review that. So entering the marketplace with extended hands. You know, a jolly young fellow there, old fellow. Barefooted and naked of breast, I mingle with the people of the world. My clothes are ragged and dust-laden, and I am ever blissful. They have no magic to extend my life. Now before me, the dead trees become alive. So, I don't know, I look at this, and I'm sure you have, a number of you have, I know. So there's a simplicity, there's a re-entering, there's a coming back, where was I, how, you know, and now there's a simplicity about this, there's an ordinariness about this. There's a blissful aspect to it. I'm caught by the word no magic to extend my life. So there's not a magic here, there's nothing that's kind of, extraordinary. And I call it but it's a perspective, returning with a new perspective. So I'm going to talk about this a bit. So what is this? This guy in this last picture. What is this? What's the characteristic of going on this journey and now appearing into the marketplace? And I think there's a couple of things that come to mind for me. there's understanding, there's a perspective here. And talked about, yeah, there's an understanding of not self, of emptiness. But I think there's also this understanding and an understanding and integration of the Buddhist teachings. There's a deep understanding of the Four Noble Truths. Seeing suffering. Recognizing the causes of suffering. Understanding the need and value of letting go of grasping. And following this path, this Eightfold Path, path where starts with the right view, right intention. And the right view is this understanding of our interconnectedness, this understanding of non-self, this understanding of the three characteristics of existence, of things are impermanent. And if we cling to those impermanent conditions, comings and goings, there's going to be suffering. Suffering is a basic aspect of being born in this, as a sentient being. And there's a sense of this not self. The understanding, moving from a self-centeredness, a view of self-centeredness, a view of self-absorption, to a view of interconnectedness, interconnectedness. And we're all in this together. We're all integrated in nature. There's an understanding of what wise intention is. The intention to not cause harm. Intention to live for my welfare, welfare of others, leading to peace. There is an understanding of the second aspect, second pillar of the Eightfold Path, of sila, of wise action, wise speech, wise livelihood. Again, aligned with what leads to peace for ourselves and others. And there's a clarity that comes with mindfulness, concentration of being present, knowing here and now. So as I try to imagine this, my guess is that all of us as practitioners have had glimpses of this. Maybe even, you know, strong experience of this open-heartedness that would arise as we interact with people around us, as we move into the marketplace, as we move amongst folks, as we consider, how do I want to be here? As we're aware of other people's suffering, our own suffering, other people's suffering. I think we've all had this experience. We've seen suffering. We know it from ourselves, seen it up close and personal. And we've been responsive to the suffering of others. Willingness to be with, willingness to connect with it, willingness and interest in the suffering ending. So as I looked at this, you know, I started thinking of, examples, you know, I thought about examples in my own life about what it might look like, or what times that I might have been in a marketplace like this, and I can think of it. You know, this is, I won't go into specifics, but just these times of just generosity, spontaneous generosity, spontaneously saying what's appropriate under the circumstances and appreciating, oh, where did that come from? Hardly a thought. It's something that can be conditioned. But there's a couple of thoughts I had about what does this look like? How does it manifest? This person, how does it manifest in ordinary lives, in our lives? And one thought that came up, and there's, you know, there's a number of, it's like small examples. One thought is a number of years ago, I don't know, half a dozen years ago, I was in Burma. And on a retreat at monastery of Utengenia in Burma, Myanmar. And as retreatants, we were able to follow and join in, kind of tag along, the alms rounds of the monks in the morning. And I always looked forward to being on that. And this is a small village that the monastery is located in. And so the monks are going down the streets and alms bowl, and people are lined up. The streets are small. They're like village streets, you know, some paved, some not. Houses kind of close to the road, you know, no sidewalks. Simple village life in Burma. And people are aligned down these roads, these streets, with rice or food that may offer to the monks. And there might be 20, 30 monks in a line. And each person goes by and offers, you know. And one image really struck me. And that was one day, this morning, and I see young people, old people, moms, dads, grandparents, kids, all lined up, all in reference, you know, bowing as the monks go by. And alms round is led by the oldest monk, you know, the elder monk, and somehow he came about having a candy bar. And this is a big deal. A candy bar is a big deal. And as he went down, this young boy offered, this, he must have been about 7 years old, he offered some rice to the monk. And the elder monk returned and offered him a candy bar. Wow. What a big deal. This kid was thrilled. You know, it was, you know, I think about Halloween. Oh, score. But this kid surprised me. He held that candy bar in his hands and bowed to the monk. Big smile on his face. As the monk passed, he ran back to his house and shared it with his siblings. Not even a question. Just this natural expression of generosity. I think about Halloween around here. That's not the experience I notice in Halloween. It's much more of a, how much can I get? So anyway, I think that, you know, for me, that somehow captures a bit of that. What is this monk, this man in this picture as he enters this marketplace? There's a joy about him. There's a sense of connection with others. There's a sense of generosity. There's a sense of not self. There's a sense of not about me. It's how recognition of interdependence. Other images or thoughts that came to mind in terms of how does manifest. I think Dalai Lama comes to mind. Thought about Father Greg Boyle. I'm not sure, you know, I'm sure a number of you know about him, about tattoos of the heart, where he started this thing called the Homeboy Industries that served gang members in the worst areas, most challenging areas of LA. I can't imagine that. You know, what's it like to be up close and personal, to have an open heart and amidst people who are angry, frustrated, act out violently, and yet by showing up with an open heart and having that presence of caring, it transforms lives. Transforms lives by that perspective of we're all here together and this willingness to share and connect. I'm not there yet, but I think that's where the practice leads. Another one was Brian Stevenson, also. The lawyer who wrote Just Mercy, and he dedicated his life to freeing people from death row, representing them in a justice or injustice system of people who were imprisoned in death row, regardless of the fact of their childhood, regarding mental conditions or abuse that they've suffered, or often because of their convenient people to prosecute and put away, take care of, put the problem out of sight, out of mind. Dedicated his life, Harvard educated, could have made tons of money, opted out, decided to connect, share, be with. And then, there's ordinary people, I think, amongst us. One thought, I start thinking about is this interdependence. I certainly grew up in a family. It's this rugged independence. Being able to take care. I can do this. I am capable. It's independent self. I can do whatever. And moving from that to interdependence, to a recognition of what's natural, what's nature. And so each of us, I was tempted to just kind of almost quiz us. What do people need? Food, shelter, clothing, medical care, education, caring as you grow up, all these. And I bet in this group we could find people who have represented every one of those. There's people in the medical field, there are people in the, or teachers, parents who are guiding kids. And I think all those are examples of entering the marketplace on, like it is on the 10th picture. So there's, in a way, we all enter the marketplace. But how we enter the marketplace, the perspective we have about entering the marketplace, can be dynamically different. If it's a self-centered entry of the marketplace, it's like, what can I get out of this? What can I amass? What fame, what fortune, what recognition, what honors, what ease can I have? Or we can enter this marketplace with generosity, with all the Brahma Viharas, the metta, karuna, appreciating others' joy, appreciating our own joy, and equanimity. When I think about equanimity, I think about, again, Father Gregory Boyle, maintaining steadiness of mind in the midst of violence and anger. So how do we want to enter the marketplace? I think is the question. How can we enter the marketplace? And I think this practice, this journey that we are on, we continue to be on, has those instructions. Again, back to right view, right intention, right action, right mindfulness. So as I looked at, reflecting on this last picture, I also appreciated the perspectives of other teachers, other people. And I'm going to just read this. It says, Columbia University has a commentary about it. It says, finally, the 10th picture shows the enlightened Oxford entering a town marketplace, doing all the ordinary things that everyone else does, all the ordinary things. But because of his deep awareness, everything that he does is quite extraordinary. He does not retreat from the world, but shares his enlightened existence. with everyone around him. And we show up at any one of these pictures from 1 to 10. But there are times that we have this potential and have enough awareness to share, to connect, to offer ourselves regardless, without that consideration. Martine Batchelor, she's often been quoted and used in this thing. A couple of things she says. She says, in picture 10 in the marketplace, we have no trouble with anyone. Emptiness depicted in picture 8, not end. It's just not the end. So that once we're enlightened or have that perspective of emptiness or not self, that's not the end. It's the next step, and it continues on. So now, responsive, wise compassion, presence. It says appropriate response to changing conditions and circumstances. I say in particular, appreciated Rodney Smith a number of years ago, back in 2008. Rodney Smith, founder of Sims, founding teacher of Sims, was teaching for quite a few years, and he did a series on this Oxford series. And as he talked about the eighth one, he said there's three aspects to this eighth picture that's depicted here. This aspect of our journey, this when we're arriving in the marketplace with this perspective, this enlightened view, this understanding of our connectedness, this understanding of impermanence, this understanding of the basic nature of life and dukkha. It says three things. We show up. One is authenticity. Authenticity. It's like being here, being now, not being elsewhere, being connected to the sense of presence. Our understanding is there's not a blaming of conditions on others, on external condition. There's an understanding of our universe arises from ourselves. And that's what we act out of. So not blaming, sense of connectedness. We're responsible for our own lives. He says it's all, he talks about we are responsible for our own inner life. Then he says, it's all our own inner life. So recognize that the way we ponder and think and judge and so forth, have a sense of that. These are just thoughts that arise, not to be taken that seriously, but just showing up as we are, honestly. Another one is integrity. Integrity. And integrity means it's bringing it together. Meditation integrates body, speech, mind. And it's supported by the precepts, supported by the teachings. It's supported by meditation. Meditation allows us this clarity, seeing. The Sangha are gathering together today. The Sangha brings this integrity, bringing together. These three makes us accountable, or shows what we're accountable to. Accountable to the precepts, not causing harm. Accountable to one another. Accountable to what we see and understanding. through our meditation that brings us to the present. And then he says, ordinary is the third one. So authentic, authenticity, integrity, and ordinary. That's what this last picture is. Picture 10, the simple but extraordinary. He's not dependent on adornment or entertainment. No added self. No bright light shine on him. Authenticity of spirit. He mentions it. It's not aligned with our culture, which we flee from the ordinary. Pursuit of excitement. Pursuit of, compliments, praise, ease. So the ordinary. Showing up in the marketplace. Smile. Open hands. Connected. Here and now. So I want to end the talk this morning with a favorite poem of mine, story of mine, by Naomi Shihab Nye, Gate 4A, wandering around an Albuquerque airport terminal. After learning my flight was detained 4 hours, I heard the announcement. If anyone in the vicinity of Gate 4A understands any Arabic, please come to the gate immediately. Well, one pauses these days. Gate 4A was my own gate. I went there. An older woman in full traditional Palestinian dress, just like my grandma wore, was crumpled to the floor, wailing loudly. Help, said the flight person. Talk to her. What is her problem? We told her the flight was going to be 4 hours late, and she did this. I put my arm around her and spoke to her haltingly in Palestinian. Shudawa, shuda, bikdak, ibiti, stani, stani, shue. The minute she heard any words she knew, however poorly used, she stopped crying. She thought our flight had been canceled entirely. She needed to be in El Paso for some major medical treatment the following day. I said, no, we're fine. You'll get there, just late. Who's picking you up? Let's call him and tell him. We called her son. I spoke with him in English. I told him I would stay with his mother till we got on a plane and would ride next to her. She talked to him. Then we called her other sons just for the fun of it. Then we called my dad, and he and she spoke for a while in Arabic and found out, of course, they had 10 shared friends. Then I thought, just for the heck of it, why not call some Palestinian poets I know and let them chat with her? This all took about 2 hours. She was laughing a lot by then, yelling about her life, answering questions. She had pulled a sack of homemade mamul cookies, little powdered sugar crumbling mounds stuffed with dates and nuts, out of her bag, and was offering them to all the women at the gate. To my amazement, not a single woman declined one. It was like a sacrament. A traveler from Argentina, a traveler from California, a lovely woman from Laredo. We were all covered with the same powdered sugar and smiling. There are no better cookies. And then the airline broke out the free beverages from huge coolers. And the little girls from our flight, one African-American, one Mexican-American, ran around serving us all apple juice and lemonade, and they were all covered with the same powdered sugar, too. And I noticed my new best friend. By now we were holding hands. She had a potted plant poking out of her bag, some medicinal thing, with green furry leaves. Such an old country traveling tradition. Always carry a plant. Always stay rooted somewhere. And I looked round the gate of late and weary ones and thoughts, and thought, this is the world I want to live in, a shared world. Not a single person in this gate, once the crying and confusion stopped, has seemed apprehensive about any other person. They took the cookies. I wanted to hug all those other women too. This can still happen anywhere. Not all is lost. So, thanks for your attention. At this point, I'd like to, hopefully you stick around and, it'd be nice to talk about what it means, Oxfording pictures, what it means for us, however you want to talk about it, but do it in small groups. So I'd like to, create these breakout rooms, and you're really not inclined to stay, that's fine, but I would like to encourage you. Even if you're not inclined to speak, feel free. Feel free to just show up as a witness. And I think that's one thing of this Oxfording pictures are about, you know, not showing up in the marketplace, just being there. So I'm going to assume that people who are still here are interested in breakout groups. I'll break you into groups of three. Okay. Those saying goodbye. All right. So see you off to the airport. Happy flying. Bring those Mamul cookies with you. So let's see. I'll break us into, one, two, three. That's three. And that's five. Okay. Here we go. And just reflect on this. Bring up how did this 10th picture grab you? Maybe I will put each to you. And about 10 minutes, 12 minutes, something like that. Well, welcome back, everyone. Yeah, hopefully that was worthwhile discussions. Any sharings or thoughts?
I wanted to share what I said at the end of my little group is that Sangha teaches us interconnectedness, because each of us kind of shared when we kind of screwed up in ways and what we're trying to do to bring, you know, to not add more harm or more crap to the situation, mm-hmm. and that honesty and authenticity of Sangha teaches us that we're all interconnected. We're all, this is the place that, this is where we swim, you know, and we're so similar. So I really love breakout groups. Thank you.
Yeah. Yeah. Likewise. I appreciate it as well. Yeah. We're here this morning. Reasonable chance I would have a football game on instead, which is kind of a waste of time. But so this is much better. You know, one thing I want to do is I was particularly taken by Rodney's talk back then about this 10th one. And, you know, as I, you know, sitting last night, I said, what am I going to talk about today? Maybe I just, play Rodney's talk. But I didn't. But I'm going to just put that in the chat. So maybe you might find it worthwhile as well. Yeah, that was one that he mentioned, Sangha. Yeah, the value of that. Yeah, the precepts. I mean, it's kind of, it's like, what's the commitment? You could kind of move through life kind of haphazardly, just kind of move by the winds of change, as they say. Oh, I want this. I don't want that. I want the pleasant stuff. I want the fame, fortune, and all that good stuff. And, not open up to the full range of life. And so I think precepts, sangha, just our and our mindfulness practice kind of keeps us more intentional life aligned with the reality of the fact that we're all interconnected. We're all mutually dependent upon one another. Yeah, Jean. You're muted.
And that's probably a good thing most of the time. I really appreciated your talk this morning. I got up this morning, as I explained in my small group, kind of grumpy with an issue that got put into proper perspective as I listened to the talk and learned that there were ways that I could open that would change that perspective. And I feel that it's happened, and I really am grateful for your thoughts and your sharings this morning. On the story of the little boy in the candy bar in Myanmar and the incident in the airport in Albuquerque is like, okay, I can set my little issue aside. It's insignificant. And so I'm grateful for the teaching. I'm grateful for the sangha. Thank you for your words this morning.
Thank you, Gene. That's good to hear. Yeah. So much is perspective. How we look at things. Self-centered, absorbed way, or is it more open-hearted, inclusive, connected way?
Thank you, Jerry.
Thank you, everybody.